This is the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show, number 41. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampath from Australia. Coming up on the show, we explore into the theme of spin bowling. Ian Pond shares another fast bowling tip with us. And we also have a chat with Mark Costin with the League Cricket Tips. Well, David, there were some funky tunes at the start. Have you been making your own music?
Well, yes, we've invested in some specially created music. We're just talking about it before the show, weren't we? Which one we were going to choose? So hopefully hopefully you like the tune. And if anyone is old enough to remember the pop music of the early to mid 90s, then there's a record called Two Princes, which that song reminds me of. So.
Well, I think you should be coming towards the end of your season, David. Have you been playing over the weekend?
I didn't get to play this weekend, unfortunately. The rain put a stop to it again before I even got to the ground. I did manage to pack my bag and leave the house, but I got a text message on the way to the ground saying it's off. And, of course, you know what happens. It happens every time, it seems. As soon as I get the text message, the rain stops, the sun comes out, and it's beautiful for the rest of the day.
Yep. Yeah.
To be honest, it was too wet. It was too wet underfoot because it had been raining pretty much non-stop for about a week. So it was too wet, really. So, you know, even if we'd have gone to the ground, that, you know, it would have been a waterlogged pitch, which is no fun for anyone.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I went to the gym instead, did a little workout, nothing too strenuous, just something to get moving, really. A few exercises just to get going, couple of chin-ups, that kind of thing. And then spent the rest of the day doing pretty much nothing.
Sounds like the perfect weekend.
So what about you? What have you been up to?
Well, the gym I go to has a pool, and I haven't really used it since I joined up at the start of this year. So I thought I'd give it a go with one of my mates who goes to the gym with me. So we had a pool session last week, and we found it. I'm not the greatest swimmer, but we found it really beneficial in terms of I could feel my bowling muscles being used, being contracted, my hips, my arms, my shoulders, and a bit of my legs as well. So I was wondering, David, does swimming transfer over to cricket? Do those movements transfer over to cricket?
Yes and no is the rather vague answer to that question. Not directly. There isn't any direct crossover in that, you know, you're sort of horizontal in fluid. So that's not very similar to running in and bowling. But indirectly, yeah, there certainly is a crossover. It's a great way of getting aerobic style exercise, so keeping your heart and your lungs healthy while having no pressure on your joints. So it's a kind of recovery style workout, if you like, especially if you've done a hard training session and you want to you don't want to do something heavy the next day or something, but you do want to do something. Then that's where something like swimming comes in, because it's low impact and it's really good. Also, what's good about it is if you're doing backstroke style swimming, then you're exercising the sort of the opposite muscles to the ones you use when you're bowling. So you're kind of rebalancing your body out, because swimming is quite with swimming you're quite evenly balanced. If you do a variety of different strokes, if you sort of do breaststroke, front crawl, backstroke, side stroke, you're exercising your body in a variety of different movements. So that's quite good, because unlike, say, bowling, where you're basically doing the same movement all the time, and some muscles are stronger than other muscles because of that. So, yeah, swimming is excellent, particularly for recovery purposes, but there isn't a direct crossover to the cricket pitch.
Yeah, cool. And what would you say about using swimming as your sole fitness training, David?
Oh, absolutely not. No. It's a great kind of supplementary exercise, if you like. But the core of your training absolutely has to be, first of all, strength training, and second of all, sprinting, or, you know, explosive type activities.
Yeah.
Now, that can vary quite a lot depending on your age and, you know, the time of year and all that kind of thing. But the core of it has to remain strength and power and flexibility.
Yeah.
And swimming doesn't give you those things. I mean, to a certain extent, it's flexibility or certainly mobility, because you're moving your shoulders, you're moving your hips, you know, you're staying moving, so that's good. But it doesn't give you strength. It gives you endurance, but it's not highly specific endurance, and it doesn't give you power because it's too slow for that. So, you know, it's as a supplementary exercise, go for gold, but don't use it as the core of your training. Not if you want to be a better cricketer anyway. If you want to be a better swimmer, then go for it.
Yeah, well, I was going through one of my friends who plays first grade cricket here in Australia, David, and I was going through his training schedule, and they seem to use swimming as recovery sessions. So after big games, they use swimming the day after sort of to stretch out their muscles. So would you say that's more apt for swimming?
Yeah, that's exactly that. That's the perfect thing to do with it. You can do a train, even if you've had a really hard game, you know, you say you've scored 100 and then you go and bowl 15 overs or you're chasing it around in the field and you get that feeling the next day, you know, that kind of I'm really tired muscles feeling.
I get that
in my thighs a lot, being a wicketkeeper, you know, you're used to it, but you kind of like, you feel that there's nothing left in there. Well, if you've got that feeling and you want to do something, you want to stay active, you want to stay moving, you want to get the blood flowing back into your muscles again to help you recover more quickly, then swimming is dead on. Swimming is perfect for that.
All right. Well, we have again Ian Pont, the fast bowling guru, who's also a Pitch Vision Academy coach, with a fast bowling tip for us this week. So let's have a listen to what he has to say.
Welcome back, Ian.
Thanks, David.
We've got a bit of a nightmare situation for you this time.
Oh, good.
It's a flat wicket, and it's a cloudless day. The opposition are 250 for one, and your captain throws you the ball. What do you do next?
Good luck with that, I think is the phrase you're looking for. Well, it depends what sort of bowler you are. If you're talking about if they're throwing it to me as a big, airy, fast bowler, then my assets are going to be hopefully pace. Now, we don't know the pitch conditions other than it's a decent deck, but is it bouncing? Is it slow? Etc. So we're going to assume that it's just not moving around in the air off the pitch, and the batsmen are making hay. If you're a fast bowler, what you can do, of course, is to crank yourself up and basically try and bowl 36 deliveries, maybe 6 overs or 24 deliveries, 4 overs. And really, you know, as they used to say in old money, bend your back, you know, try and make something happen. I think part of the problem when you get to situations like 250 for one against you is that all the momentum has shifted from your team when you went out on the field with a new ball going, come on, lads, let's go, to 3 hours later seeing that they're actually panning everybody around the park and there's nothing left in the game for you at that point. And that's the mental side of cricket. That's the momentum part. You know, someone joining that game for the first time who couldn't see the scoreboard, for example, if you just pulled somebody out of the car park and said, look, come and have a bowl, don't look at the scoreboard, just bowl, they'd run in like a young kid and bowl as fast as possible. So there's no reason why you couldn't do that if somebody throws you the ball as a fast bowler and say, come and give me 4 overs of pace. The problem, of course, is that we're all affected by match situations. We're affected by pitch conditions. Because we're human beings, we're also affected by momentum, and that's being taken away. So what you can try and do in that situation is to shift the momentum back towards the fielding side. And how you would do that is clearly obviously try and take a wicket. It might be to bowl a couple of Yorkers, bounce some slower balls, basically change the tempo of the game, maybe try and rough the batsman up a little bit. If it's not a bouncy track, maybe then try and bowl some variations. If it's not seaming or swinging, you've got the options of change of length. You've got the options of change of speed. You can come round the wicket. You can go wider of the pitch. There's lots of things you can try. If none of those fail, then you're in for an incredibly long day in the dirt, let's be honest. But, you know, as a fast bowler or any type of bowler, there are lots of weapons in your bag that you can go to. And it might be that your frontline weapons haven't worked and your secondary weapons haven't worked. So you have to think, right, okay, what do we do here? If none of that works, your only option is to just bowl maidens, basically, try and keep the game tight, you know. But if the side have got 9 wickets in hand and 250 on the board and you're staring down the barrel, you know, you've got to suck that up, I'm afraid. I mean, there are days that you simply have in the field where you end up chasing massive totals. And whatever you do, the opposition are going to dominate. And that's just a fact of life. But, you know, fast bowlers tend to have the mindset of wanting to bowl with pace. So I would always encourage a young kid or even a senior player in that position to just keep coming in, doing what they do best, trying hard. You know, the other thing as well is drinks breaks, lunch breaks, tea breaks. The batsmen have to start again. You know, so if there's any type of break in a game, batsman's concentration gets broken, they have to come back out again. And for a couple of overs after that break, they are more vulnerable. So you could use break times as a team, get together and say, right, we've got a couple of overs here, guys. They might each have 100, but they've got to refocus again. We've had a drinks break, but, you know, someone's changed his helmet, someone's changed their boots. And you might also try to do that yourself. You might say, somebody change their boots, for God's sake, you know, we'll have a break here. Do you know what I mean? I mean, you might find a way of breaking up the rhythm, but 250 for one on a hot day on a flat wicket, I mean, good luck, because that's just tough. It's just you've got to think, how can I break the rhythm, how can I change the momentum? And I think those are some of the things you could probably think about.
If you want coaching from Ian Pond, you can access Pitch Vision Academy's How to Bowl Faster coaching course on www.pitchvision.com/academy. And now it's time for the League Cricket Tips of the LCA. It's the final part of our chat with Mark Costin, who is the coach of the Bank of England Cricket Club in the Surrey Championship. And this week we talk about how the coach can help senior players with their performance.
You mentioned the psychological side, which I think is very important. I mean, they say that, you know, 80% of the game is mental, maybe even more than that. How much individual preparation do you do with players when it comes to that side of things? You know, do you set goals with players? Do you do that kind of thing?
Yeah, we do. We made every player at the start of the season write down their sort of goal for the season, their individual goal for the season, and put it on a piece of paper and then put it in a hat. And we put that away and with the plan of getting it out at the end of the season and seeing whether you met your goal. So if you've said, I want to average 40, then at the end of the season we'll take it out. And if you've averaged 42, then you've exceeded your goals. So we made everyone do that. And we, you know, tried to make it realistic. So I sort of spoke to everyone a little bit beforehand about what it should be, but it was very much their own goal. You know, it wasn't me saying, right, you should average 50 with the bat.
Right.
Put that in the hat. So everyone sort of had their own goal, and we made them put that in. But I mean, psychologically, one of the things that I try and do is I try and build up people's confidence, because I find that in club cricket, there's, and I'm sure it's the same in any level of cricket, is that there can sometimes be a lot of negativity around, and actually, not thinkingly, it can have quite a negative effect on people's game.
Right.
I mean, again, I can give you quite a good example of someone at our club, in that you've got a guy who bowled leg spin for Surrey all the way up through the youth teams and was wonderful, brilliant leg spin bowler.
Right.
He also is a good batsman, but so he gets in our first team as a batsman. But as a kid, was always an awesome leg spinner. And in the nets now, he looks wonderful. He's got technically the most perfect leg spin action. It turns the ball miles both ways at good speed. You watch him bowl and you go, wow, he must take 40, 50 wickets every season. And often new players to the club just go, wow, this guy's amazing. How many wickets did he take for you last year? And we go, actually, he didn't bowl. But he, growing up, was very successful. And then one game for our first team years ago, as a 19, 20-year-old, a senior player, really respected player, he bowled a couple of long hops, and this guy just said, that is absolute rubbish, possibly in stronger language than that. But and then it was sort of, they took, and he had the mickey taken out of him that for quite a lot. And, you know, no one really gave it much thought. and then he sort of lost it bowling. He got, you know, he used to feel differently psychologically bowling in a game to bowling in the nets. In the nets, he had like tunnel vision. Mm. Like you've got the netting either side of you. It looks very easy. And you've got this exact, if you get it wrong, it just hits the net, doesn't go that far. Whereas he had this issue where then he went into a game and like he could bowl it to the square leg boundary and nothing would stop it. And so it just seemed very wide and far away for him. And that was all because, or largely because he'd had so much stick from teammates. And so I worked with him and basically just spent a lot of time reassuring him, telling him how good he is. Because he really is, I think, something quite special. And it was unbelievable that he wasn't bowling. And so we got him bowling in a couple of early games when we'd sort of won the game. You know, opposition would be 120 for eight, chasing 300 or something. We'd make sure we got him on with no pressure. And he got on and did well and would often take a wicket here or there. And now he's bowling sort of as not as a first choice spinner, but as the sort of the batsman who bowls spin as the second spinner. So that's really good. But psychologically, things like that are very important. And we don't, in league cricket, people don't give that any thought. They think that it's okay to be negative and take the mickey out of each other because, you know, you're all grown ups and can handle it. But actually, a lot of people, because they're not professional sports people, they do other things during the week. They don't understand the importance of sports psychology and the importance of positivity and encouraging people. You know that if you believe you can do something, you're a lot more likely to do it than if you don't.
If you play league club cricket in the UK, you can join the League Cricketers Association and have your voice heard, and it saves some money. Visit www.thelca.co.uk for more information. That's www.thelca.co.uk. Welcome to the listeners' question section. This week we explore into the theme of spin bowling. David, I hope you're ready because our first question is from Usman. And he says, "Hi, I heard Shane Warne talking about having a plan for batsmen. The plan is just as simple as how do I get him out. He also mentions plans dictate how you will bowl to them and what field you will set for them. Can you tell me how I can use plans to take more wickets as a leg spinner? I'd like to force the batter make a mistake rather than wait for him. It would be nice to understand this tactical side of bowling." Now, David, what do you reckon? As a batsman, what goes through your mind while facing spin bowlers? Do you expect spin bowlers to have a plan when they bowl against you?
Well, I do, definitely. I think all spin bowlers have some kind of plan. I think the higher level you play, the more complicated those plans can be because the more control the spinner's got. I mean, with a lot of, say, club spinners, then their plan really is, as Usman said, just to tie a player down for long enough till they get frustrated and play a big shot. And there's nothing wrong. That's a really good plan because most batsmen who are, again, playing at club level are going to have some kind of limitation. I mean, there's a lot of first-class cricketers who've got limitations. So if you can tie a batsman down just by good length, he can't score, then, you know, that's a pretty good plan. He's going to have to find a way to score somehow. So that's a pretty good plan. And that's all a plan is in my mind. All a plan is thinking of a way to get a batsman out that might take more than one ball. What I'd say isn't a plan or isn't a particularly good plan anyway is trying to bowl that magic ball every single ball. You know, for a leg spinner, the one that pitches outside leg and just flicks the top of off stump. You know, the gatting ball. Mm. You know, one of those. Because you're not going to bowl many of those. Shane Warne didn't bowl many of those. So you're probably not going to bowl too many of those. So you have to have a bit more. You have to have a bit more nous about it. So, and there are loads of different plans. The best thing you can do is look at the batsman first. Try and tie the batsman down initially. Get him to face a few balls against you, so you can get an idea for the way that he plays you as a spinner. And then, I mean, this is the way I would look at it from a captain's point of view. Anyway, I mean, I'm not a spin bowler myself, so I don't. confess to understand the art, but I do. I have captain spinners, and I do know sort of what they're thinking about when I talk to them. So, yeah. What I'm looking at is as a captain is thinking, right, where are this batsman's good shots against this particular type of bowling? How can we cut those shots off so he can't score with them? And how can we try and encourage him to play in areas that he wouldn't normally play into?
Yeah.
So your classic example with a leg spinner is to pack the offside and keep the mid-wicket sort of square leg area quite open in front of square, because it's quite hard to score through the ball which is turning to score with the ball which is turning away from you through that area. Yeah. You have to play against the spin. So if you're if you're sort of teasing the batsman to play against the spin like that, then you've got that's a plan to get him out. You might bowl a few balls outside off stump, and he might even hit a couple of drives that they go to the fielders, and then you bowl one a bit more leg side, and he tries to play across it and gets a leading edge or something like that. So there's an example of a good plan. Another good plan, which I heard Shane Warne talking about on the TV the other day in the Ashes, was just keeping keeping either the mid on or the mid off up, depending on what type of bowler you are. So if you're a leg spinner, you could keep the mid on up, and say to that batsman, okay, I'll give you four if you can hit it over mid on, but again you'll have to play across it.
Yeah, there's a whole risk element comes into it, doesn't it?
The batsman's trying to minimise the risk.
Yeah,
but still score.
Yeah,
what he wants is to score at the rate that's required with a minimum of risk. That's always his aim. Obviously, the later in a one-day game you get, the more risks they're going to take, purely because the situation requires it.
Yeah.
But what you want to do is make the batsman play in a way that increases the risk.
Mm.
So whatever you can do that increases the risk is a good plan. But for a young spinner, for one who's just learning, you don't want to start with any complicated plans, really. You just want to start with bowling a line and length. If you can put six balls on a line and length, against a lot of club level batsmen at least, they haven't got the ability to work the ball around like higher level batsmen have. So you're tying them down.
Yeah.
So that would be my advice on making plans. Don't get too cute, but do think about it.
Our next question is from P. Novotny. Mm. And he or she says, I'm finally getting to the point with my off spin that I'm getting consistent line and length with my bowling, but I cannot get to the nets as often as I like, and I have a small yard. So what drills can I do in the backyard to continue improving my spin bowling? Now, David, if he or she means small yard as in small enough to be smaller than the length of a pitch, I think he might have a problem. What do you reckon?
Yeah, that was my initial thought was I've got two questions about that. And one of those questions is exactly what you thought. How big is the backyard? Now, I don't know what country this person's from, but relatively speaking, a small backyard in Australia is probably a large backyard in the United Kingdom. So, relatively speaking, you know, we have much smaller outdoor areas than Australia do. So, it depends how big it is, and that, you know, we don't know the answer to that. And the other thing is, what do you want to improve? He hasn't said what he wants to improve. He's said that he's getting close to the point where he can get a consistent line of length. So that's good. Well done. Congratulations on that. Yeah. You're obviously going in the right direction. You're obviously doing something right to be able to do that. He wants to ratchet up the training. So is that to be even more accurate? I mean, that's a fair enough aim, but we don't know. Or does he want to develop a top spinner, or what's the aim of this? So we're a little bit in the dark of what he wants to do. I suppose if you're accurate, the next step after you've got accuracy is to be able to control your flight. So for a captain and for a wicketkeeper for that matter, it's an absolute joy to see a spinner who can put the ball in roughly the same place every ball, but every single ball is a slightly different pace, bit more flighted, bit less flighted. It's absolutely brilliant to watch. you know, trying to tease out the batsman and really trying to find where the batsman's weak spot is. So if we assume that's what it is, you can tie a bit of string up. If your backyard is big enough, you can tie a bit of string up and bowl over the string, and that teaches you how to bowl with flight. And you can vary the height of the string, you know, or washing line or whatever you like, landing the ball in the same place, but having a piece of string there so you know how much flight to give it. The problem occurs, as you say, is if the yard isn't big enough to be able to bowl off your full run-up. And then, so, I mean, what we're talking about, that's probably about 30 yards, something like that, in distance you would need a minimum, I'd say, that maybe 25 you might just get away with, maybe. But, any less than that, and you can't bowl off your full run-up, so, or you can't bowl a length because you don't know where a length is. So there, you probably have to just work on your action. Just bowl in the area that you've got, but just work on making sure your action is absolutely dead on. You know, make sure that you're bowling with a good pivot, that you're getting your hip around, that you're using your fingers to give the ball a good rip, and that, you know, your head is heading towards the target. All the key points of a spinner's bowling action, really, and that's all you can do, and then try and get down the nets more, because there's only a limit to what you can do when it comes to that. That's a good practice because you're getting the feel for what it feels like to bowl correctly, so that's a good practice. But at the end of the day, it's not as good as actually bowling the ball. So, you know, get to the nets as much as you can if you've got a very small yard.
And it's a big no-no to also practice on a smaller pitch, isn't it, David?
Yeah, because you when you come to a proper size pitch, you're bowling too short all the time. So that's not good. That's not a good idea. Unless your yard is exactly the right distance where you can, it's a good length where the wall is, then I suppose you could bowl. Thinking about it, you could bowl then where you can just try and hit the bottom of the wall where the wall touches the ground, and then you know you're bowling on a good length. But you'd have to measure that very carefully before you decided that was right.
All right, our next question, David's from Butch Thaba, and he says, "Hi, David. I'm a big fan of Pitch Vision and follow it faithfully. And this is the first question I'm asking, and many more to come.
Excellent.
I'd like to ask you a question relating to spin bowling." And he says, "I'm an all-rounder who can bowl fast, medium pace, and spin as well. And I would like to know how to get wickets or control the runs in case of a 2020." Or an ODI, One Day International, on wickets that have nothing for the spinners. Now, David, the first thing I thought of when I read this question was line and length and change your pace. Vary your pace. What do you reckon?
Yeah, it's still quite an art to bowl spin in those limited overtype formats, but it's just a bit of a different art. You know, you're not necessarily there to take wickets as such. I mean, wickets are always good, but...
Yeah.
Probably your main role as a spinner in one of those limited over style games is to bowl in the middle overs when the batsmen are trying to knock the ball around and score a few boundaries, and it's your job to keep the run rate down to as low as possible.
Yeah.
So, I mean, wickets will come as a consequence of that. But again, you want to put that magic ball out of your mind, the perfect delivery that, you know, bowls someone through the gate like Ricky Ponting was in the last test.
Yeah.
You'd want to put that out of your mind. If that happens, that's a massive bonus. But what you really want to do is be a very patient bowler. And as you say, bowl a good line and then vary the pace of the delivery, vary your length slightly to work out exactly where the batsman is weakest. You know, is he not so good off his back foot to you, then you can drop it a bit shorter. If he's not so good off his front foot to you, you can make it a little bit fuller, and then set a field. The modern parlance is a squeeze field. Set a field that is designed to cut off the shots of that particular batsman. So in the case of an off spinner, you'd have more men on the boundary on the onside if it's a right-handed batsman, and in the case of a leg spinner or a left arm spinner, you'd have more men on the boundary on the offside, because that because most batsmen will go with the spin. So off spin, it'll go to the onside. Slow left arm, it'll go to the offside. So you set your field accordingly. I mean, if you've got a batsman who's slogging across the line and you're a left arm spinner, for example, then you know, then maybe you'd go a bit more leg side with your fielders. But the whole idea of the field is to have a few close-in fielders who can stop the singles, the quick singles and the tip-and-run tactics, and then boundary runners who can stop the boundaries. And you really want to squeeze the batsman as much as possible, stop them scoring runs at all if you can. The ideal situation for a spinner is to bowl a maiden. There was a match on the television the other day, a domestic English county 40-over match, where the batsman was on 91, and they brought on a part-time off-spinner, and he bowled 5-dot balls to this guy. And the first couple of balls he blocked, he had a little look. Next couple of balls, he tried to work the ball around, couldn't work it away. You know, I think he knocked one to a field and then tried to play a sweep, missed it. And he obviously got frustrated. He ran down the track, sliced it up in the air, straight to short third man.
Yeah.
So
That's pressure.
And that was purely the pressure. And he was on 91, so he had his eye in. He was going well because I think it was the 32nd over or something. He was on 91 in a 40-over match. That's pretty good going as well, isn't it? So he'd obviously been smashing it around a bit. And he was just pressured out by a part-time off-spinner who just put the ball in roughly the same place every delivery. So that's what you've got. What you've got to do as a spinner in those limited over style formats is just stop the runs, force the batsman into the riskiest shots that you can by the way that you place the field, cut off their best shots, and wait for them to make the mistake. Which is different from longer games where you're bowling to a plan of trying to get batsmen out. In limited over games, you do that a lot less.
David, while a spinner bowls, what do you reckon is more important for them to be thinking? Taking wickets or stopping the flow of runs?
In limited overs, you always, your first thought is stopping runs. Always.
Yeah.
Wickets are handy. Wickets are handy, but and they're a good thing. But as a spinner, you just can't afford. You know, you can't buy. If you're buying wickets, then you're going to be in trouble. You know, I think probably a better analysis in, say, a 10-over spell in a 50-over match. You know, a better analysis would be 1 for 35 than 5 for 70. Perhaps you know, or maybe not 5 for 70 because that'd be pretty good going, but. You know, 3 or 4 for 7 or something like that. So,
yeah,
I mean, it does depend. Always it depends. But, yeah, I think your first thought should be, how can I stop this guy from scoring? And then your second thought should be, how can I get him out? And you can do clever things. You know, you can put pressure on a new batsman by sticking a silly point in for a couple of balls until he gets off the mark. You know, stuff like that. But again, it's about building pressure. It's not about bowling these great deliveries that move in the air and then bite off the track and beat the batsman. It just, you know, especially in one day games, especially at higher levels, you just don't get the pitches for it. So stick to squeezing the batsman and watch them make mistakes, because they, unlike longer format games, they can't really wait for the bad ball. They've got to manufacture something.
Don't forget that you can catch all the articles, updates, forums, and anything you hear about on the show on www.pitchvision.com. Stay tuned for our next show on the 14th of August, with the theme being nutrition for cricket. And so if you have any questions or feedback to add to that, or in general, please email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Thank you for listening and hope to see you next time. So signing off from Sydney, Australia, this is Kevin Sampath.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.
The My Cricket Coach Show is a copyright-protected production for Pitch Vision. For more information, please visit pitchvision.com.